Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Before we begin today's call, I'd like to remind everyone that the conference will contain forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Reform Act of 1995 and other securities laws. These forward-looking statements are based on the company's beliefs and expectations as of today, November 13, 2019. Forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those projected. The company undertakes no obligation to release updates or revisions to forward-looking statements made in today's conference call. Additional information concerning factors that could cause those differences is contained in the company's filings with the SEC and the press release announcing this conference call. Investors are cautioned not to place undue reliance on any forward-looking statement. I'd now like to welcome you to the Stabilis Energy Business Update Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Jim Redinger, President and CEO of Stabilis Energy. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Jess, and thanks for everyone for joining us on the call today. I'm Jim Redinger, the President and CEO of Stabilis, and with me is Andy Puhala, our Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. I'll make a few opening statements, and I'll hand the call over to Andy to review the financial results. We're very pleased with the strong continued organic growth in our core LNG production and distribution businesses. Year-to-date, LNG revenues are up 25% versus 2018, driven primarily by increased LNG sales to customers across multiple industrial end markets and continued cross-border sales into Mexico. Adoption of LNG as a fuel continues to grow in both the virtual pipeline applications, which is where LNG is used to deliver natural gas to users that do not have pipeline access or have curtailed pipeline access, and fuel displacement applications, which is where LNG is used instead of traditional fuels such as diesel, propane, or heavy fuel oil because of cost, supply security, or emissions benefits. We're also pleased with the new market growth opportunities we see in front of us, including LNG production and distribution investment opportunities in Mexico. I will discuss some of these opportunities after Andy reviews our financial performance. One more comment before we get going regarding our stock exchange listing situation. As you all know, Stabilis was delisted from NASDAQ in September 2019, and we've been pursuing alternative listing opportunities since then. While I cannot provide specifics at this time, I can say that we believe that we have made significant positive progress on this issue over the past weeks, and we believe that we have this issue resolved within the next 30 days. For context, our analysis shows that Stabilis currently meets all of the quantitative listing requirements required for a new listing on multiple prominent stock exchanges. While meeting these quantitative criteria does not guarantee an approval for listing, we believe that it's a significant factor in the process, and we also believe that it demonstrates Stabilis' qualifications to be listed on a major exchange. We hope to be back with positive news on our exchange listing status soon. I'll now turn the call over to Andy, and he'll discuss the specifics about our financial results, and then I'll finish the call with additional discussion about our growth opportunities. Andy?
Thanks, Jim. Before I start, I want to provide a little background to help those new to Stabilis understand our published results. We completed our share exchange with American Electric Technologies, also known as AETI, on July 26th. Due to the nature of the transaction, Stabilis was considered the acquirer for accounting purposes, even though AETI was the legacy public company. As a result, the Stabilis Form 10-Q filed for the quarter ended June 30th reflected the legacy business of AETI. However, the 10-Q just filed for the quarter ended September 30th relates to the financial performance of Stabilis and reflects the acquisition of AETI on July 26th. To put it another way, our second quarter and third quarter Forms 10-Q aren't comparable. For the third quarter, Stabilis reported revenues of $10.5 million, an increase of 31% versus the $8 million reported in Q3 of 2018. The increase is primarily due to a substantial improvement in the utilization of our George West liquefaction plant. Utilization of the facility increased to 82% in Q3 compared to only 55% a year ago, driven primarily by increased activity with industrial customers and Mexican exports. The consolidation of AETI added $1.4 million of revenue in the quarter. Revenue growth excluding AETI was 14% as the additional volumes produced at George West were partially offset by a temporary reduction with one of our large distribution customers. EBITDA for the quarter was a loss of $0.7 million compared to positive $0.2 million in the same quarter last year. In the current quarter, we incurred $1.1 million of special one-time charges related to our share exchange with ADTI, the equity investment by Chart Industries, our acquisition of Diverse Energy, and work surrounding our listing on a major U.S. exchange. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was $0.3 million in Q3 of this year, compared to $0.2 million in the same quarter last year. As a reminder, EBITDA and adjusted EBITDA are non-GAAP measures. A full reconciliation of adjusted EBITDA is detailed in the tables in our press release. For the 9 months ended September 30, our revenues were $34.6 million, a 30% increase compared to the first 9 months of 2018. As Jim mentioned in his introduction, LNG-related revenues, which exclude revenues related to the ADTI acquisition, increased $6.6 million or 25% versus the same period in 2018, driven primarily by a 52% increase in gallons delivered from our George West liquefaction facility. EBITDA for the first 9 months was $2.9 million, which included about $1.5 million of special items, as mentioned earlier. Adjusting for these, Stabilis reported $4.4 million of adjusted EBITDA through the first 9 months, 131% improvement from the same period in 2018. As a reminder, Q4 and Q1 are normally our strongest quarters due to winter peaking projects, primarily in the Northeast. We have several new projects and opportunities beginning this quarter and a strong opportunity pipeline heading into 2020 to allow us to continue to expand the business. When we originally discussed the ADTI transaction back in December of last year, we publicly stated we could expect to do $40 to $50 million of revenue and $5 to $9 million of EBITDA adjusted for deal expenses in 2019, which is consistent with our run rate through the first three quarters. I'll now turn the call back to Jim for some comments on the market.
Thanks, Andy. Before we take questions, we wanted to provide a quick update on two things. One is the status of our international businesses, and the second is an overview of some of our growth initiatives, particularly those in Mexico. On the international front, as you know, we've got two businesses that we purchased from ADTI. One is a China oil field focused business, and one is a Brazilian business in the power sector. On the China side, the market for domestic oil and gas exploration in China remains strong, and orders at that business are very strong. We believe that will continue for the next several years as China focuses on domestic energy production. That means that we should expect to see continued strong and potentially improving dividends from the China joint venture. On the Brazilian side, the business is steady and beginning to see some improvements from the improving market fundamentals in the energy sector, particularly the offshore sector in Brazil. And we continue to look at that business as well for potential synergies on LNG expansion into the Brazilian markets, which is in its nascent phase now. On the other growth initiative side, as we discussed in August, the market fundamentals for LNG growth in Mexico, in our belief, continue to be very strong. Mexico is a large and thriving economy, but it lacks the robust natural gas pipeline network required to serve many energy consumers, both on the commercial side and on the residential side. Second, the cost of alternative fuels, including diesel, heavy fuel oil, and propane, is generally higher in Mexico than in other markets, which provides a better differential for LNG, a more favorable differential for LNG versus those fuels. Third, truck transportation costs, which is the primary mode of transportation for small-scale LNG, are very favorable in Mexico. Fourth, Mexico is committed to reducing its environmental emissions by using cleaner-burning fuels to power its economy. And fifth, fuel security remains an important issue, and it's somewhere that LNG can help benefit. So we remain very convinced after extensive investment and work in Mexico over the last several months that our thesis on the fundamentals has remained strong there. We believe that our investment in Diverse Energy, which is a licensed importer of and distributor of LNG in Mexico, in conjunction with our joint venture with Grupo Clisa, which, as you all probably know by now, is a very established and well-respected Mexican operator in the energy and other end markets, have us well-positioned to invest in the growth in the Mexican LNG market. Based on our internal estimates, which we believe could be conservative, the Mexican distributed LNG market on the small-scale side could be as much as 3 million gallons a day or 1 billion gallons a year over the next 5 years. This translates to approximately 11,000 cubic meters per day or 4 million cubic meters per year. And while this market will be very large for operators like Stabilis, it represents only a market penetration of about 5% of the current combined distillate fuel and LPG market. So a very small market penetration required to create a very big opportunity for Stabilis. Our current project development pipeline in Mexico, which includes projects that we are currently actively bidding or otherwise developing or pursuing, includes over 900,000 LNG gallons a day of customer demand. For context, this is about 9 times our current production capacity at our George West, Texas facility. These opportunities span from the LNG delivery contracts. They span between merchant development and take-or-pay contracts, and there's a wide variety of industries and projects that are represented. We plan to make announcements on projects as they are finalized, and specifically we hope to have some news on a Monterrey area Mexico facility sometime in the near future. As step one in our Mexican expansion, we are establishing an LNG transportation hub on the Mexican side of the border to facilitate our customers' access to LNG in Mexico. This hub, located in the Nuevo Laredo area, is designed to reduce our customers' exposure to border crossing logistics and provide a reliable source of LNG from Stabilis in Mexico today. We will use this hub to facilitate our growing Mexican LNG sales as our LNG plant development plans progress. I'll conclude by saying that we're pleased with the opportunities in front of us in Mexico, but also with the opportunities in the domestic markets, and particularly the marine market. We plan to make announcements as investment decisions are finalized across all these opportunities. With that, now I'll turn the mic back over to Jess, and we can begin taking questions.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset to provide the best sound quality. Also, we ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up, and then rejoin the queue if you have further questions. This will allow everyone the chance to ask their questions. Again, it is *1 for questions or comments at this time. Please hold while we poll for questions. We'll go first to Craig Scheer at Tuohy Brothers.
Good morning.
Hi, Craig.
Morning, Craig.
Hi. So with the public listing overhead and then the AETI businesses, that includes the JV equity interest, the kind of adjusted EBITDA guidance, obviously what you shared before was just for the LNG side of the business, that $5 to $9 million. As you think about how you're tracking year to date on the LNG side, plus the combination of being public and the AETI businesses, is there some kind of adjusted combined range you might give?
Craig, this is Andy. We're not going to give further guidance on it at this point, other than to say that we believe we'll be within the guidance that we gave originally. $34 million of revenue in the first 9 months. I think we're likely to be on the lower end of the EBITDA guidance because of some of the transactional costs that we've talked about that were not all contemplated, when we originally gave that guidance. But other than that, we're not really don't want to be more specific at this point.
At this point, is it fair to say that the legacy AETI is neutral to marginally positive on an EBITDA basis full year?
I'd say that's right, Craig. It's not delivering as much EBITDA as we had originally thought, and it's essentially break even or maybe a little bit better than that.
Okay, and I just want to clarify the $1.1 million transaction cost in the third quarter, that is excluded from the, what it was, $0.6 million adjusted EBITDA?
Yes. It's $0.3 million of adjusted EBITDA for Q3. Yeah, and that is after adding back the $1.1 million of one-off transaction-related expenses.
Okay, and if I could just fit one more in, and then I can hop back in the queue if that's okay. Seems the distribution side of the business had a tough quarter, down year over year on weaker oil field customer sales. presume this hits harder in the off quarters since drilling tends to slow naturally in the winter and you've got other distribution ops that hit their peak in the winter. On an annualized basis, how do you see distribution performing year over year and versus expectations, and just how economically sensitive do you see this business?
So a couple things on your question, Craig. One, we had a temporary stop of a distribution customer in the fourth quarter, or I'm sorry, in the recent quarter, in the third quarter, which gave us a less favorable year-over-year comparison with 2018. That business is going to come back online shortly. So just want to stress that was a temporary disruption for non-seasonal reasons, for non-stabilis reasons. The other thing I'd point out is we had in the distribution business, this is you're looking at year-over-year comparisons, for a couple of a very positive one-time projects in the third and fourth quarters of 2018. We had a very strong second half in that business last year. So we feel like we're on track, absent this temporary disruption for this year, on a normalized basis. And then we'll, as Andy mentioned, we've got multiple fourth quarter projects, as we'd expect, coming online for the winter peaking season. So we feel like we're rolling into the fourth quarter with the right momentum.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it was star one for any questions. We'll move to Matt Dane at Titan Capital Management.
Great, thank you. I want to focus in on the last comment you mentioned there about Q4 projects that are coming online for the peaking season here, the winter peak season. I was curious, how would you qualify those projects or the amount of customers that you have lined up this year compared to prior years? Just was hoping to get some color around that.
Yeah, Matt, this is Andy. You know, we've got, I'd say, a very robust pipeline of new projects for Q4. You know, I'll just talk about a couple here at a high level. You know, we just signed up a four-month peaking project with a large utility in Massachusetts. We just signed up a four-year contract with a utility in Rhode Island for seasonal peaking, another four-month project for the peaking season in Pennsylvania. So we've got a fairly robust pipeline, a number of projects that are kicking off now and around the 1st of December. So we'll see those results in Q4 and Q1 of next year.
I'd say, Matt, to answer your question, it would be this quarter would be the same or favorable to what we've seen in past quarters, in past fourth quarters.
Okay. And the three customers you listed there in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Pennsylvania, Andy, those aren't necessarily new customers. These are just customers that are coming back around with different lengths of contract terms. Is that the right way to think about it? Is that what I'm hearing more or less?
Yeah, it's a mix of both. Some of these are new customers, and some of them are customers that we've done work for in the past.
Okay. Wanted to also ask if I could. You mentioned the marine market at the tail end of your remarks. Was curious what additional color you can add around that. How likely this is to develop into a real opportunity for you folks. Help me understand how you're viewing that.
You know, we see the fundamentals in marine, if you track the number of ships, both cruise and transportation, you know, the bulk transportation ships, the fundamentals are continuing to improve. As you look at new ship orders, we are having increased dialogues with a number of both shipping companies and partners that would help serve the shipping companies with LNG. The way we see it evolving is there will be, there are some now and will continue to be some larger LNG bunkering pilot programs going on as some of these new ships hit U.S. markets on both the East Coast and the West Coast. And we're actively participating in several of those that we hope to be able to finalize and announce in the near future. But the way we see it progressing is those pilot programs will be working for maybe the next year or so, as a number of these bunkering operations and ships are tested and the process and the procedures are worked out. So we think that over the next year and a half, it's kind of a test phase. while people are getting used to the vessels and the bunkering process. And at that point, we could see more higher investment in some of the bunkering operations, whether that's land-based or ship-based.
And so if you did have success with these beyond the initial test phase, would that likely require you to build a new facility closer to some shipping terminals to facilitate that? Is that sort of the second phase of that if this does go according to plan?
Yeah, I mean, it's to be determined, Matt, but there would be some investment. I'd say it's either in a LNG production facility that's closer to the marine terminals where the LNG can be delivered from the boats on a land basis, or it's a potentially a marine bunkering vessel that either picks up from our facility or another facility that would go to do waterside bunkering for ships. So that process hasn't been finalized. We've seen it happen both land-based and water-based in various situations. So that's to be determined. But, yeah, once the market develops and the customer demand emerges from these test pilots, then we'll be better equipped to know what kind of investment would be required.
Great. That's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
One final reminder for questions. It's star one. We'll return to Craig Shear at Tuohy Brothers.
So in the prepared comments, Jim, I think you mentioned imminent plans for a new Monterey facility. Does that have anything to do with your 25,000 a day liquefaction train and storage? And can you all comment at all about either traction already realized or pending to reposition any underutilized distribution and storage equipment into Mexico?
Yeah, I think step number one in redeployment of equipment is the transportation yard I talked about. So we're establishing that here now to provide a Mexican side of the border transportation hub so that we can help our customers reduce their exposure to border crossing issues. So we'll deploy some transportation equipment there to have that equipment or have that LNG on the Mexican side of the border from George West. So that's step one. Step two is establishing a larger presence in the Monterey area. I don't have a formal announcement to make today, but I can tell you that we've made a lot of progress on land and pipeline tap and plant technology decisions. We've got a number of decisions we can make there. And so we hope soon to be back out with more tangible announcements on that, but we want to let everybody on the call know we are progressing and moving towards a decision there.
And so making this hub using some repositioned equipment, can we assume that your costs are materially reduced as a result of the repositioning and that your distribution capacity utilization could be anticipated to improve hopefully markedly in the coming 12 months?
Yeah, the cost of establishing the yard are very low. There's no new investments in equipment required. There's a very, very small operating expense to providing it. I think the reason we're doing it now is to have to proactively position fuel on the Mexican side of the border, again, to give our customers more comfort that border crossing and other issues won't be a problem for them. They haven't been a problem to date, but having the fuel in market is just going to enhance our sales and marketing efforts. So that's why we're taking that step. It's something we can do quickly and at a relatively low cost to still provide better service to our customers and hopefully not only to existing customers but to new customers as well. So, yeah, that's going to help expand our utilization at a low cost. And as we move forward with the a production facility in Mexico in the Monterrey area, we will plan to try to use our equipment some of the fleet down there as it makes sense. There's a number of regulatory and other steps we need to make sure we're working within the boundaries of. So I don't have anything again specific for you now, but as soon as we do, we'll let you know. But overall, the plan is to deploy underutilized assets into this project, both to expand the market down there and improve the overall asset utilization we have.
Great, thank you.
We'll go next to Jorge Berman at Cabin Lodge Securities.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question.
Good morning. Good morning, George.
You mentioned earlier that you had some deliveries to utilities in the Northeast. The recent announcement by NGG that they are having to truck in natural gas into the New York, New Jersey market to meet the demand there. Would that be an example of what you could deliver there?
Yeah, those are perfect examples of some of the gas demand issues that are going on in the Northeast now. There's a lot of, obviously a lot of political and infrastructure arguments going on up there, but our job is to bring gas to people that need it, and places where the pipeline isn't sufficient to do it, we're seeing pretty good opportunities throughout New England, not just New York, New Jersey, but throughout New England.
Okay. On the revenue line, you show for the 3 months ended September, LNG, $9.14 million, power delivery, $1.37 million. How is that differentiated?
Power delivery is the legacy AETI business, George.
Okay, okay.
Really, and you can think about it as being the Brazil revenue from that from the Brazil subsidiary, because the Chinese business is a is an equity income investment for us.
Right. Then the next line, gallons delivered. You showed the George West facility delivered 7.5 million gallons, and third party 3.2. What does that entail?
So, you know, George, there's two parts to our business, as you know. It's kind of the production of LNG and also the distribution and field service and support for LNG for gallons that we don't produce. And so those third-party gallons are gallons that we've delivered to customers under contract, but we don't produce at our George West facility. We have a we have a network of over 25 sources of LNG that we can pull from to provide LNG really to anyone 24/7 here in the United States.
Okay, so I would assume then that the third party deliveries are a lot less profitable than your own production deliveries, huh?
Not necessarily, George. It's very contract specific. You know, some contracts have a lot of rental equipment that goes with them. You know, vaporizers, storage, a lot of technical service. It really just depends on a contract by contract basis.
Okay. And then maybe I squeeze one last one. And can you comment on this temporary reduction by one of your customers? What brought that about, and how soon do you expect it to be picking up again?
We expect it to pick up in the next 90 days for sure, but probably in the next 60. It wasn't fully explained to us, George, but I think it was just a budget decision to put the job on pause for a short period of time.
Okay. And the new facility you're building up south of the border, how big would that be? You mentioned on your last call that you expect some significant opportunities in Mexico. Can you quantify those in terms of gallons to be delivered, or maybe building your mothball plant back up there?
You know, George, we've got a number of options, both in the Monterrey area and in other parts of Mexico, and we're working hard to develop both the plant side of that and the customer side of it. We don't have a specific announcement to make today. What we did say earlier in the call is we're pursuing projects that represent about 900,000 gallons a day of demand. We're not saying we're going to win every single one of those projects. What we're trying to say is the pipeline is robust, and we believe we will win some of those projects. So what we're doing, you know, our job is to find those projects, make sure that they're the right kind of projects for us and for shareholder returns, and then design the plant and all the other specifics around that. So we're trying to be careful not to be too specific on those things until we've got solid information. Like I said, we're hoping to come to some decisions soon on an initial project, and as soon as we have that, we'll send it out in a press release and schedule a call to talk about it.
Okay, and then maybe last question, the uplisting. We have volume zero today, 21 shares yesterday. What are you guys doing specifically to get listed on a tradable exchange?
Yeah, we there's a certain process you need to go through with the exchanges, and as we talked about in September, we immediately at that point started going through the process with the major exchanges to get the stock relisted on one of them. There's a number of screening questions and screening committees you need to go through, and so we're working on that process, and we've been responsive. And like we said, we're not going to say more specifics because we're not nothing that's publicly disclosable now. But what we wanted to let you know on the call is that we feel like we've made some very positive progress over the last few weeks, and we hope we can have the situation resolved over the next month.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, George.
We'll return to Craig Shearer at Tuohy Brothers.
Hi, just two clarifications. First, want to make sure the capacity utilization you share ongoing for the George West liquefier is based on the nameplate 100,000 gallon a day, not what you think you can do, maybe 120 a day. And also want to clarify that the comment in the last series of questions that third-party distribution deliveries versus delivery of internally generated LNG are not necessarily different margins relates only to distribution margins, but that, of course, ignores the vertical integration, the ramping of liquefaction capacity.
First question, Craig, yes, the utilization that we report is based on the nameplate capacity of the plant of 100,000 gallons. As we've talked about, in the past, that plant can and has, under certain circumstances, produced more, up to 120,000 gallons a day. So that's the first question. On the second question, in terms of the distribution margins, I mean, we're in the process of rolling out additional data to the market to help you guys start to better understand the business. The distribution volumes basically is everything that is not produced from George West. What we're saying is production volumes is everything coming out of that George West plant. And it would include, when we think about the production side of the business as it's structured today, the production margins would include the distribution revenue and costs related to those volumes coming out of the plant, if that makes sense. So there is some distribution margin in the margins from the production side of the business.
Oh, there is. I guess I was trying to understand, does George West, in terms of segment reporting and talking about margins for distribution, does George West arguably charge a market rate to distribution such that you may say, well, yeah, if distribution sells some of our internally generated liquefaction, it's not necessarily at a wider margin. It depends on the details, but obviously the whole company benefits.
Craig, the way we're reporting is that if it's under the production line, that means the LNG came from the George West facility, and any revenue with the sale of that LNG, which sometimes includes some transportation revenue, is on the production line item. If the LNG came from a third-party facility, it's in the distribution line. So the sale of LNG, rental equipment, people, all those charges are in the distribution line if the LNG came from a different facility. That's how the numbers are presented.
Distribution is 100% third party.
Yes.
Yeah. And we don't. Yeah, Craig. We don't manage those as separate segments, really. We don't specifically disclose distribution revenue, production revenue. We talk about LNG revenues together. This is just some supplemental data that we provide so you guys can understand kind of utilization of the plant and start to drill down a little bit more.
Great. Thank you.
And, gentlemen, we have no other questions holding. I'll turn the conference back for any additional or closing remarks.
Now, this is Jim. Thanks, everyone, for getting on the call. We appreciate it, and we look forward to bringing some more good news here in the near future on a number of the topics we talked about. Thank you very much.